This is Allison Bailey, your host for Practice Made Perfect podcast series. Considering the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic, we decided to add additional podcast content focused on this emergency and what's important for our cardiovascular team now. We're doing this for several reasons. We know that patients with cardiovascular disease are at higher risk of infection with COVID-19 and develop more severe complications if infected. Additionally, we're learning COVID-19 has cardiovascular complications associated with the virus, so we will almost certainly be seeing these patients. And the cardiac care team will almost certainly be in the trenches trying to help develop solutions for our higher risk patients, whether that be in the hospital or the clinic. Obviously, this is in flux and will change rapidly, so make sure you're listening to the most current information at any given time, and we'll update things as available. This is Allison Bailey, and I'll be your host today on this special edition of Practice Made Perfect. We're going to be talking about telehealth and ensuring quality cardiovascular care during uncertain times. I'm very excited to welcome Dr. Ami Bhatt and Dr. Andrew Freeman on the show today. As you all know, we're in an unprecedented time in healthcare as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to evolve worldwide. We know that our patients with cardiovascular disease are at an increased risk of morbidity and mortality from the virus, but they also need to be able to get quality cardiovascular care in the safest environment feasible. This has led to the rapid need for telemedicine services. Earlier this week, CMS approved changes in the way telehealth services are delivered during this emergency that will allow us to bring the safest, most effective care for our patients and lower their risk for disease. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Dr. Ami Bhatt is an associate professor at Harvard Medical School and director of outpatient cardiology and telecardiology at the Massachusetts General Hospital. We're so glad to have her with us today. Welcome, Ami.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'd also like to welcome Dr. Andrew Freeman. Dr. Freeman's the Director of Clinical Cardiology at National Jewish Health and a member of the Science and Quality Committee here at the American College of Cardiology. Welcome, Andrew.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I'd like to thank both of you for joining us today and quickly rearranging your schedules so we could get this information out and help facilitate the safest care for our patients during this emergency. Can I ask each of you if you were doing any telemedicine before this pandemic? And if so, could you briefly tell us what it involved? Ami, how about you start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually started telemedicine about 6 years ago, and the reason was out of necessity, actually very similar to our issues today. At that time, we had a real problem with loss to follow-up in the subspecialty I see adults with congenital heart disease. They'd had lifelong disease, and they didn't really want to come back in, or they lived too far away from a center. And so it was out of a need that I realized that if I was going to keep people in care and keep them healthy, I needed to be able to provide care for them where they lived and not make them come into the institution. So that's how my journey with telemedicine started several years ago.
So you really use this technology to fit a clinical need. How much of your population do you think was telemedicine visits before this?
Probably about 10% of the entire group. If I have about 3,000 patients, about 300 were on telemedicine.
Okay, wonderful. And then Andrew, how about you? What was your experience prior to the last couple weeks?
I think like a lot of places, this was always a pipe dream, right? It was a nice adjunct as opposed to an absolute necessity. And even though we've been dabbling and testing here and there, we never really sort of pulled the trigger, so to speak. And so this is an exciting time because I really get to see some of these things come to fruition.
I have a similar experience. We talked about it, but it hadn't quite gotten there yet because it wasn't really essential like it is now. All right, let's fast forward to today, March 19, 2020. I'd like to talk about three scenarios and how we can most rapidly and effectively deliver patient care today. How about we start with what an optimal and enduring telemedicine or telehealth office visit looks like? Obviously, if we're thinking about starting a program, a long-term enduring program is the most complex from a system standpoint and really what we should all be aiming to move to once this emergency is over. Ami, you've been doing this, so what can you tell us?
Absolutely. So, again, echoing what you said, right now, people tomorrow don't need to aim for what we're going to talk about first. We'll talk about easier and simpler ways to get started by next week. But long term, we're going to need this. Long term, it's the right thing to do for access, for patient care, for patient-centric care. And I don't know that COVID-19 is going away anytime soon. So we'll want to protect our high-risk cardiovascular disease older patients by giving them less exposure, which means not bringing them to elective outpatient visits in person if they don't have to come. So with that in mind, the integrated EMR telehealth system is probably the most reliable way to do this long term. There are other ways that will last, but these are the kind of visits where if you take some, I'll just give you our example, we have Epic as our EMR, and we have InTouch Health as our provider. We previously had a different one. And the reason that this works is that you could actually have your own schedule. You have a schedule just like you would in the office. You know which patient is coming, what day, what time, but instead of them saying follow-up visit in the office, it says virtual follow-up. And all you have to do is double-click on an icon with a little video, and instead of you opening a door and being with a patient in a room, you open a window on your screen and the patient is in their home or in a conference room at work, and you can start that visit. You document an Epic the way you would for a regular face-to-face visit, with a couple modifiers, and we can put some stuff out about that later. But really, this is a way to be able to run an entire clinic from the comfort of sitting behind a computer, and right now from the safety of the patient being in their home and you being in your office or your home.
The equipment that comes with that, it can be, it's web-based, I assume.
So the great thing is if you have a laptop with a camera or a desktop with a camera, you're all set. If you're a patient, you can actually just log on to the patient gateway system for Epic and similar for other systems on your MyChart right on your phone. So you really just need a patient with a smartphone to be able to receive it on one end. And on your end, it's actually probably easiest to do it from a desktop or a laptop if you have one.
Okay, that's great. And then the billing and everything, like you said, we'll put out some additional information, but we really want to talk to people about the safety components of this and trying to rapidly implement these programs to get patients in.
One other thing to think about right now is even as we start to figure out the logistics of billing or how we set this up, it's important to recognize that having this kind of a system actually allows us to be able to track patients and track them well. So the sooner that people are able to get integrated systems up and running, I think it is a priority because it's much easier to be able to follow these patients several weeks to months later and understand what happened rather than having independent systems or phone calls, which are a little bit harder to track.
Okay, great advice. Now we know what aspirational or long-term looks like for a telehealth clinic. Let's talk about starting a program in today's environment with the recent CMS changes. Andrew, what do you think the major changes are that were released on Wednesday from a month ago? Can you go over that with us?
Yeah, so first, I just want to point out that I think the major emphasis right now is simply on getting people the help they need where they're at, right? So you could imagine that if you're elderly or if you have chronic immunocompromised conditions and so forth, getting out to visit with your doctor or other clinician is not safe or possible at this point. So rather than leaving these people hanging, the appetite with CMMS and others is really to get to a place where it's easy to provide care directly in the comfort of their home at their whim, if you will. So in short, the CMS changes have made some major hurdles disappear. So first, you know, it used to be that you needed to have a HIPAA compliance or other type of system. And that's actually true with one of the solutions, which is called Zoom, which many of us have used for educational purposes. But now you can actually get away with using FaceTime or Skype or all some of these other video conferencing technologies that are not exactly secure. Now, I suspect that will probably be in the short term because as things start to get better and normalize, folks are going to want to have that extra layer of security back on. But for now, people are doing almost whatever they can to sort of get people up and running here. So I think the appetite for that is there. The appetite for sort of equal billing for equal work done is also there. So a lot of folks have feared switching towards a virtual visit type of model because they were worried that they wouldn't be able to keep the lights on in their institutions. And I think that is very rapidly changing in a very positive way. And I would tell all of us clinicians out there who are thinking about doing this to just do it if that was the hurdle that was keeping you back. And by and large, each day, additional things keep coming down the pike that are making it easier for us to provide care with less hurdles right now. So in our particular situation, you know, we're using Allscripts with a plan to potentially switch towards Epic in the near future. And so we don't have a very fancy integrated solution, but our IT folks are working feverishly to get Zoom up and running. And what I want to point out for the clinicians out there who are saying, oh, I can't do this, it's too hard. I mean, you could pretty much have a Zoom session with your smartphone, using your smartphone without necessarily sharing your phone number, with a patient who's also using their smartphone, and keep that up next to your EMR as a very simple, basic, bare bones solution. And in a lot of clinics, and what we're trying to do is actually set it up where there's two computers, or at least a dual monitor system, where one side is running the Zoom session and one side has the EMR. And it's almost like you're sitting next to your patient, except you're not actually doing that. And then I would also point out that there are more and more changes going on that are making it easier to provide care for patients that are new, as opposed to just established patients. And there's even some changes being proposed in some networks in some areas, regions in the country, where you can actually see patients over state lines, at least temporarily, without necessarily having a license in that other state, which is very interesting. So, and I bet Ami probably has other ideas, but I would say that it's a very exciting time.
And I believe that this applies to all members of the care team. It's not just physicians, but nurse practitioners and physician assistants can also build via telemedicine.
That's right. They've added it to, and made it and broadened it so that almost every clinician type can get to do this.
Okay, great. That's a great review for us, Andrew. So, Ami, you already have a telemedicine and program in place, but like you said, you weren't taking care of the majority of your patients. How are you making changes so that you can safely manage a larger volume of patients in this crisis?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that we recognize is for our greater outpatient practice in cardiology, we're seeing 350 to 400 patients a day, and that's a large volume of patients that we now need to figure out how to provide healthcare for, and for a longer period of time than we were initially expecting, we'd have to keep them out of the office. So the first and foremost thing we do is we tell everybody, look at your schedules and get in touch with those patients somehow. And so we're fortunate, our Governor Charlie Baker actually approved even telephone visits to be compensated at an in-office level for the state of Massachusetts, no matter the provider. And so that's been immense for us in that, you know, there's some relief there, but also some recognition that if you get on the phone with your patient, the most important thing to do is get in that EMR and document the conversation that happened, the planning that's happening. And so that is telemedicine, and that is something that's happening within states, across state lines for established patients, and increasingly new patients in state even for telephone. We're waiting a little bit on a new patient across state lines just to make sure that malpractice insurers come along with the government. So that will probably change rapidly, like Andrew said, the next 48 hours, I'm certain. So everybody can make phone calls to their outpatients and document what happens, and I think that's the base that everybody needs to do. If you step one step further, I was actually speaking with an ACC member just earlier today, Dr. Ankit Kumar Patel in New Jersey. He had no telemedicine system 7 days ago. And after having looked at some information and actually an article that Andrew and I had the privilege of writing a week ago, never has anyone done anything based on an article I've written, by the way, so this is great. He actually bought a Zoom license and got his practice up and running. So he's seeing full clinics now. They use Epic for their notes, but in the Epic schedule, in the notes section on your schedule, they just write Zoom meeting to do the following. And then they get on Zoom on a separate screen. The Epic is open at the same time, and it's as if you're in the room with the patient. And he's even gotten it to a point where the patient's insurance is confirmed the day before, so we know that it's going to be okay. They document that the patient said a Zoom conference would be okay in the note to cover a little bit of the legal and the insurance issues. And then the MA actually calls and does a lot of the pre-charting, goes through the meds, makes sure the patient has them right. And the MA actually commented to him today how great it is that the patient's at home, because there's never the comment of, I don't remember. They just wait until they walk to the bathroom, open up their bottles, and actually share what those meds are. So they've got a system up and going in 7 days that works. And so this can definitely happen. So we have phone, we have the Zoom version, and then we have those systems that have integrated. And what I will say to the cardiologists out there is find out if your practice or your system has telemedicine anywhere. Because once they have a telemedicine plan anywhere within your practice, you could probably pull it over to your practice. And if you can, that's the next step to do. And in the meantime, I would also encourage people to talk to their governors and talk to their state government levels to encourage insurance companies to cover the work that we're doing. I think that is important.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. And Andrew, I know you were starting and you mentioned that you're using Zoom. So your clinics will start next week, I believe you told me.
That's the plan, right? So we will actually have several Zoom workstations actually in the office that are available for virtual consults. And we're figuring out a way to securely email Zoom links to patients. And then we'll basically hopefully be able to offer this as a important and compelling option. As you probably know, in many parts of the country now, there are serious lockdowns going on. And as a result, this is in high demand, as you can imagine.
And you were able to do this very rapidly, too, it sounds like.
Well, yes. So our IT people have been working feverishly. But in short, Zoom has always been ready to go. We've used it historically for education and grand rounds and that kind of stuff. But now using it for patients is a really easy turnkey type of solution. For those of our listeners that are curious how much this costs, an introductory level service from Zoom can be as little as $10 or so per user. Of course, they scale up based on the features and the amount of users you need.
Okay, great. And so two different methods. I'll share what we've done. We also had no telemedicine cardiology services, but felt strongly from a patient safety standpoint, we needed to transition and have available telemedicine visits this week. So we are having our staff call patients and asking them about this as a viable option. If the patient is in agreement, then they're added onto the schedule and with a notation of telemedicine. And then we find out if they have video phone or internet capability. I'm actually practicing in a rural area, so a lot of our patients don't have either a video phone or internet. And if that's the case, we're using just telephone, talking to the patients, and they've been so appreciative. The MA checks the patient in, much like the other practice you were discussing, goes over the medications, and then I get on the phone and talk with them. I did a FaceTime visit today with two patients who were in their 80s, and they loved it. They're like, please never, always keep doing this. So we don't have to come out and get this virus. So I think it's been really great from my standpoint, too. And so if we move forward and think about starting a program from scratch, Andrew, you've done this in the last week. What kind of words of wisdom do you have?
I think it takes a lot of patience and testing. I know that we've actually solicited a couple of free visits with some test patients to make sure this would work. You also want to make sure that you think a little bit about tech support, right? So when you have a number of elderly folks, even though they may have smartphones, installing the app and making sure they're ready to go for the visit can be a problem. And it's something that we want to make sure you have the appropriate support to sort of help and troubleshoot ideally before the visit starts. And I bet Ami has some similar advice there, but I'd be curious to hear how they're dealing with that. But other than that, it's really relatively turnkey. And then our next step, of course, is to integrate it in the EMR, but that'll be probably a few weeks from now for certain.
Okay, great. I hope the listeners realize that the reason to make this rapid push to telemedicine is not just for convenience, but it really is the safety of this high-risk population we're taking care of. We know when we look at these studies coming out with COVID that cardiovascular disease and patients with advanced age and comorbidities have the highest morbidity and mortality. And really flattening the curve is crucial for all of us at this point, and we can really make a difference. We're also fortunate CMS realized the importance of this tool in helping to treat our patients and giving us the ability to quickly deliver excellent care in a safe environment. Ami, you mentioned this a little bit, but how are the private insurers handling this? Do you know outside of your state, or is this being extrapolated to private insurers across the United States?
Yeah, so they've actually been a couple private insurers, and I won't say the names because I have to say I don't remember exactly which. There's so many emails, but there are a few who actually have sent forward, if you're going to use telemedicine, we will cover you emails. Some are regional, some are state-based, and some are countrywide. And so I think it's important to recognize that they are coming around, especially since CMS kind of put down their declaration. It's also just the right thing to do right now, which I think is really important. One thing I will say along the lines of, you know, just being safe is we're keeping our patients safe, but a lot of transmission right now of COVID-19 is in hospital workers. And so actually keeping ourselves out of the hospital and ready to replace the next set of people who are covering inpatients, et cetera, is really important. So outpatient is one place where if you can figure out how to do it from home, it's okay. New people may be worried. Will I miss something? The great thing about a virtual visit is if you see them and you're at all worried, you can still bring them in. It does not mean you can't. So people should really feel free to start using this and to recognize that they'll get a comfort level with it the more they use it in the near future. Perhaps the last thing about safety is we've talked a lot in our community about having personal protective equipment. And so the more we can take things that can be managed virtually and not need people in the hospital to use personal protective equipment for that, the more we'll have it available for extreme situations, ICUs, codes, and other things where the risk of transmission is probably higher.
I think that's really great advice. I'm glad you added that on there. Andrew, anything else you'd like to add before we close tonight?
Yeah, I can't stress it enough. At the population that we serve, they're incredibly high risk with advanced lung disease and advanced heart disease. And this is really going to be the wave of the future. But I'll also add that for hospital systems that have been thinking about this in places that are geographically diverse, like Colorado, where I practice, you can imagine that this could save somebody a trip through treacherous mountain passes. You know, when they're living in the valleys and the nooks and crannies of a mountainous region, this is an amazing technology that can provide care where it couldn't normally be provided before. And as the availability of numerous sensors and wearables and, you know, vital sign checking devices become available, it won't be long before we can probably do almost exactly what we do face-to-face in person as we can do via telehealth.
All right, great advice, and thank you both so much for taking your time tonight and being flexible in the middle of a very busy period for all of us in healthcare. And remember, stay home, wash your hands, and take care of yourself to our listeners. Thank you.